So Glenn believes that we are in the end of end times. That's interesting. We'll get back with him in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Glenn, right before we got to the top of the hour, you were talking about looking at the unraveling of the DNA molecule and what that means to what we're talking about tonight. Why don't you elaborate a little bit on that?
Right. When Crick, who was the first to unravel the DNA molecule in 1953, he won the Nobel Prize for unraveling the DNA molecule. Excuse me. And one of the things that was interesting about that was is the fact that he says that within each of our bodies, in every one of our cells, if you were to unravel each individual piece of DNA, it would extend about 2 meters long. He says with the trillions of cells that we have in our body, if you were to tie those DNA molecules together, they would extend approximately 125 billion miles. That's just the DNA inside of one human being.
That's a lot of DNA.
That is a lot. He says then that only 5% of that DNA is used for the creation of the physical body, the mind, consciousness, and everything else. That 95% of that DNA or more is what scientists have called junk DNA because they don't know what it's being used for.
You know what's funny? When he discovered the secret of the life, he was accused by a newspaper of being under the influence of LSD at the time.
He was under the influence of LSD at the time.
Oh, he was?
He most certainly was.
All right.
In fact, part of what he did when he was under the influence of LSD was it actually helped him to unravel the DNA molecule. If you were to ask Don Juan Mattis, once again referring back to Carlos Castaneda's, Don Juan Mattis would say that the only way for you to understand life on this planet would be to take a hallucinogen and do so with intent. And what he meant by his intent was to have a discovery process in your mind and ask that question. You know, I've been around this all for a very, very long period of my life. My sister, for example, typed the last book for Timothy Leary. His last book.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, you know, we knew Small Timothy world. Leary. We knew what he was all about. Timothy Leary was not a good guy, and I'll tell you why. He was right in the sense that under these hallucinogenics, in fact, Graham Hancock in recent days, his last book was written while he was on a hallucinogen. Or he describes his experience on the hallucinogen. And I have utmost admiration for Graham Hancock, and I'm sure you do as well.
Yes. I think he was on ayahuasca?
Ayahuasca, yeah.
Yes, ayahuasca.
Yeah. But anyway, Crick, and you ought to hear what he has to say about how it helped him develop the understanding. But Timothy Leary, what he did was is that he legitimized this for recreational purposes. And I'm going to tell you right now that that's the most foolish thing in the world. It would almost, and pardon me for saying this, it would almost be better that you died and passed on to a greater place than it would be to get lost in that 11-dimensional space because you were playing with that kind of nuclear weapon of the of the DNA. If you ask me, am I a fan of that particular process? The answer is no, and abundantly no. No one should ever do that. There are plenty of books, one of them on my website by Strassman, delineating the MDT molecule. I don't know if you've had any guests describing the MDT molecule, but it's the MDT molecule is called the spirit molecule because this MDT substance, which is the same basic structure as LSD or as ayahuasca or mescaline or whatever it is released into your body at the moment of crisis or at the moment of your death, which totally violates a Darwinian thought about evolution in this particular sense of the word, that why in the world would we adopt releasing an MDT molecule that accelerates our thinking processes through the death experience when it could not have been opted by natural selection because you're dead after you have this experience, nor was it survival of the species because you didn't survive. those people who had this experience did not survive. So it would have been very hard for these processes to have come about in a Darwinian protocol.
I tell you, this Francis Crick story fascinates me at how he was able to do this.
Well, Francis Crick noticed one thing. Remember that the DNA molecule is a mechanical computer. Let's boil it down to something people can visualize. Our computers are electromagnetic based. This computer that we have inside of our body, which they found now in the fossilized ruins 3.9 billion years ago in the mitochondria of single-celled organisms, that the structure of DNA has not changed for 3.9 billion years. That also violates a Darwinian model of evolution, because what it's saying is that the computer has not evolved. It's DMT, not MDT, excuse me.
Right.
DMT. But the structure of the DNA molecule has not evolved. The computer has not evolved. Just the things that the computer does have changed over time. It's like going into a company and finding new uses for your computer over a long period of time. But the computer itself didn't change. The computer has remained constant. In fact, Francis Crick said that the chances of us finding the DNA molecule here on the Earth out of the random primordial soup were roughly the chances of 1 to the 260th power. Oops. Now, that's 1 with 260 zeros behind it. Let's quantify that for a moment so people understand that. If you count all of the molecules in the universe, that would approximate 1 to the 80th power.
See, and did not Crick believe that the DNA has not evolved at all, but kind of was introduced?
Yeah. In fact, Crick said that let me preface that by saying that in our scientific protocols today, for example, I had a long talk with Thomas Budge, who was a geneticist and head of the dairy at a major university here in the West. He says that once scientists have reached a phenomena that has reached 1 to the 60th power, that it is impossible for us to think of that as occurring by chance. The chance is no longer a factor, okay?
Right.
1 to the 60th power is no longer a factor. What Crick was thinking in his mind was that this is impossible, that DNA arrived here on this planet by accident or was mixed with the primordial soup. First of all, the amino acids are necessary to create the specific proteins to create DNA and vice versa. So it's a chicken and the egg process. It just simply is an aberration that suddenly appeared. The most complicated molecule in the universe suddenly appeared. And Crick said that there was only one model he could think of for its appearance here, and that was that aliens had brought it here.
Now, could those aliens have been an organism on an asteroid or a meteor, or are we talking about an actual genetic involvement by extraterrestrials?
It could not have been on an asteroid or a meteor, because should there have been an atmosphere, an asteroid or a meteor would have risen past 10,000 degrees centigrade, which would have destroyed the functionality of a DNA molecule, mm-hmm. caused it so it couldn't exist or couldn't replicate itself. And if there was no atmosphere, it would have hit the Earth and been at a higher temperature than that, and therefore would have destroyed it as well. So it could not have come here on an asteroid or a meteor under any circumstances.
What about divine intervention?
This is a tough one for you. That's the bigger picture, isn't it?
Yep.
That someone placed it here deliberately. And they did it, they placed it here deliberately with no worries about time.
Right.
They didn't worry about time. We're the only ones worried about time. We're the ones worried about, in the creationist model, the Earth being 6,000 years ago, which is preposterous. And the evolutionist thinking that the Earth is 4.9 billion years ago, which is absolutely correct, and the two of them infighting over who is going to win this argument of how old the Earth is, that's not an argument anymore. The Earth is 4.5 billion years old, and that's just the way it is. That does not deny a creationist model, and it certainly coincides with the idea that someone deliberately placed the DNA molecule here. Now, one thing interesting about DNA, 95% of it's not being used. Now, the guy or the person or the entity that placed the DNA molecule, this great mechanical computer here on the Earth, would have surely put in the programming a way of communicating back and forth with this molecule. Now, in other words, when we look at the DNA molecule, 95% is not junk.
Right.
95% is actively going on all the time. Our conscious minds are only capable of about 2,000 bytes of information a second, when in reality our brain is functioning at a level of about 4 billion bytes of information a second. Something's going on inside of our body that is not part of our conscious mind. What is happening? It is my suggestion that it's only logical to presume that this part of the DNA that people are unaware of what the purpose of it is actually in communication with a deity or with the other elements in the universe.
And we're not aware of it?
And we're not aware of it.
It kind of reminds me of a governor put on an engine where as fast as you want to go, it'll only hold you back to a certain speed. I wonder if they programmed that into us.
Well, they most certainly did. And since this is a mechanical model and not an electrostatic or electromagnetic model, remember that SETI, for all the fine people that work at SETI, they've really goofed.
How so?
They've goofed in the sense that they put up an antenna or they put out their big dishes looking for a signal from extraterrestrials via the electromagnetic spectrum. The electromagnetic spectrum has a speed limit on it. That speed is the speed of light. As a matter of fact, some of the light that happened at the Big Bang has yet to escape the farthest reaches of the universe,
true,
the known universe. And so the universe has expanded faster than the speed of light. So if we're looking for a signal from a civilization across the universe from us, then the last thing we would use to try and communicate with it would be something based on the electromagnetic spectrum. However, scientists have now proven that at the moment of creation, if two atoms are created simultaneously at the same moment, think Big Bang here, if they're created at the same moment, they are connected. And what happens to one affects the other no matter what the distance is. You could have the same one molecule here on the Earth and one on the other side of the universe, and they would instantaneously react at the same instant of time. We are on the verge, George, of a communication system that could communicate across the universe instantaneously and not be limited by the speed limit of the electromagnetic spectrum. In the future, all of our communications will be a mechanical model and not an electromagnetic model.
When do we find this?
Well, we've only had understood electricity for a couple of hundred years, and we've only had radio and television for a century. That's just a fraction of a heartbeat of the age of the Earth, and it's even less in terms of the age of the universe. The universe is somewhere between 14 and 16 billion years old, but it happened in an instant of time. Now, I would be an atheist if the universe were infinitely old. And the reason is that would mean there's no fingerprint of a creator. But the fact that it was created, no matter how long ago that is, 16 billion years in comparison with eternity, isn't a heartbeat. It's not even a fraction of a heartbeat in time.
Or 13 or whatever it is.
It is evidence of creation itself. And the fact that all of those things happened at the same time, they are connected, and we will find out sometime in the next couple of hundred years how matter is connected one to another and how life is connected one to another, and we will be able to communicate with each other. That's how the sixth sense works. That's how prayer works. That's how the shamans work. That's how the extraterrestrials work. That's how everyone else in the solar system, or in the universe, is operating using a different radio than we are.
Do you think all the ancients were extraterrestrial visitors, and that would include, you know, the Greek gods, maybe Jesus, all of them?
Do I believe in all of them?
Well, do you believe that they were extraterrestrials?
I think we're all extraterrestrials. All of us came and were born here into this world, and we came from some other place. The classic religious model, based on solely holding up your Bible, saying this is all the history in the universe that there is, which is ridiculous, is to suggest that I lost my train.
Well, you know, my thought was, you know, there's always been this theory that you know, the Greek gods were aliens from another land, that Jesus was an alien. And as far-fetched as it may seem, is it possible?
Well, an alien in the sense that he had contact with moving from this planet to another planet.
Yes.
Back and forth.
Yes.
Yeah, he is. The Greek mythologies, as we call them, quote unquote mythologies, are all based on the writings of Hesiod, and what, we've done a class on that. But Hesiod, all of these. Zeus, etc. If you follow those stories carefully, you'll find out that the real story behind that is contained in one of these four civilizations prior to the coming of Adam and Eve. And they parallel one for one. There's such a high correlational coefficient between the Greek mythologies and the real text that talk about the four former civilizations that it will stun you. It'll bring you to your knees, and you'll realize that even though it seems these Greek mythologies appear to be comic book events, they are based on real events.
I want you, when we come back from the break, talk about Enoch and the entire city of people that simply took off and left this planet. That's an incredible story, Glenn. Absolutely
right.
Incredible.
Let's do it.
What's new on your websites? We've got a couple of them. Which ones do you recommend? All of them?
I recommend, they all go to the same place, www.kimballcollege.com, K-I-M-B-A-L-L. When you get there, you're going to find a set of classes. There are now 42 classes. Don't worry about doing them in sequence. Take a set of them, take them and listen to them. You're going to find out that they are the most important things that you will do in terms of basing what you already believe and enhancing what you already believe. They won't conflict with what you believe. They will enhance what you believe.
And these classes, do we get graded on them, Glenn?
No, you don't get graded on them at all.
Can't
they
fail them.
Scripted word for word, unlike what you and I do on the radio. We kind of see to the pants and love each other for that. These are scripted word for word so that we can actually begin with a premise or a thesis statement and work through it to a final conclusion. And they're powerful. They treat all kind. First of all, we have ancient texts. We treat the subjects of science. We treat all of the religions of the world, all of the ancient texts in the world, all of the histories in the world. And most recently, we have a real nice, even for those who like soap operas, we have one of the greatest soap opera stories in history, where Joseph, who was sold in Egypt, meets his wife, and that story is just absolutely fun, from an ancient text in the 2nd century B.C.
All right, when we come back, Glenn, let's talk about the story of Enoch, which is incredible, especially the way you tell it, and then we'll get into end times. I've got to ask you about that, because you do believe we are in the end of end times. I'm George Norrie. When we come back at the top of the hour as well, we'll open up all the phone lines for you, so no need to call yet. Wait about a half hour. Get ready for the incredible story of Enoch, and also we'll talk about end times when we come back the next hour, an entire hour with Glenn Kimball and you on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Glenn. In the way you can, tell us about the story of Enoch.
Well, what happened to Enoch was the same thing that has happened to other people in other epochs of time. What happened to Enoch, he was the seventh generation after the Adam and Eve. And he came into a culture seven generations after Adam and Eve that had been exposed to these fallen 200 watchers, these ones that fell from grace, and also to a civilization that didn't have books or texts that like we do today, and as a result, had really gotten run afoul of themselves. And Enoch set out to basically cause these people to change their ways back from being a decadent society, cruising for a cataclysmic event, and to change their minds into being good people. And he was so successful at doing this that an entire culture of people, we don't know the exact number of people that were involved, but it was a lot of people, they were taken from the earth someplace else and promised that they would be returned at the time of the coming of the millennium era of time, which is in our day, which is just coming upon us right now. But these people left, and it's interesting to know one thing, that they were so good that they could not remain here without violating the protocol of the intent of the purpose of this earth, the meaning behind this life. Well, so now we have people who could not remain here because they were so bad that they were wiped out by the deity and the powers that be because they would have altered the protocol, the prime directive of this earth. And now we have a group that had to leave because they were too good. Apparently, there's a protocol for the purpose of this life.
How did they leave, Glenn? Teleported? Craft? What happened?
Well, they left in the same way the Watchers did. They left dimensionality. They walked off the edge and into
the other one.
Into the other one, and they probably, I have not found a document yet, I'm looking for one, which suggests that maybe they became part of the Watcher movement itself.
Well, that's a good possibility. They may have come back as Watchers.
They may very well be a part of this noble, heroic, immortal group that is waiting to come back at the time of the millennial era of time, when it says the devil will be bound and there'll be 1,000 years of peace and there'll be one faith and one political structure and people won't be killing themselves and it'll be, you know, we live in a wonderful time, George. And the wonderful nature of it is that we're going to leave our kids the legacy of the greatest moments of the history of this planet. We can always think that we don't want to bring people into this cruel, wicked, violent world, when in reality we're on the verge of leaving the generations that follow us, our children, perhaps our grandchildren, into an epoch of time when all of this violence, when the lion will lay down with the lamb, where they will have an existence far beyond what we have.
Native Americans speak of an intra-world travel. Is this possibly what happened to them?
Very much so. In fact, many of the Native American Indians, in my opinion, speak specifically and in terms of using the same kind of vernacular as would a Watcher movement. In fact, Don Juan said, as I said earlier in the program, that the object of a man of knowledge was to lead this life without having to experience death, and that he would come and go and become one of the allies. Don Juan called them allies, which is kind of a curious term, because the Watchers, in fact, are our allies and do the bidding of the heavens and do come back and help us from time to time. So Don Juan Mattis from Carlos Castaneda's spoke in terms of a Watcher group, and I find that fascinating myself.
Glenn, because end times is so important to so many of us, you said earlier that you think we are in the end of the end times. Explain that.
Well, and this is why we still have a show left to do. People think that 2012, December 21st, is the end of the world. That's not what the Mayan civilization said at all. It said that some major change would take place. And now, by the way, these same records are with the Vedas and the Nagas in India.
Yep.
They are very much ingrained into the Chinese. In fact, the Chinese have a sun disk very much like the Mayan disk, calendar disk. And embedded in that calendar disk, we need to talk about that in another future show. What's there, not only the date 2012, December 21st, but when you're asking me what my opinion is, I wouldn't be surprised to see 2025 come by and not have this event take place yet.
But go ahead.
That's not too far away. As you well know.
No, it's not.
you and I have, you know, what is 15 years?
They keep clipping by really fast, Glenn.
You and I, 15 years ago, I mean, I can remember that like it was this morning.
Yep. And where did it go?
I think it went right around my waist.
When you hear the word Armageddon, what do you think?
Armageddon is the final conflict between good and evil. It is the final battle. The purpose of this life, if you read the biblical texts and the lost books of Eden and the book of Jubilees, all kinds of ancient texts, they will tell you that Adam and Eve didn't have the Ten Commandments for sure. The commandment they had was that they needed to have the knowledge between good and evil. And that is the prime directive of this life. We could not possibly, where we came from, experience good and evil because there was no evil there. We had to come to a place where evil was possible in order to us to learn firsthand the consequences should we have opted for some evil purpose. And that's why this life is so very short in comparison with the eternity or the age of the earth or even the age of mankind. Life, you know, when they talk about survival of the species and natural selection, that Darwinian model would have opted for longevity or extended years of life, when in reality what it has opted for is very, very short lifetimes. That is very contrary to a Darwinian model.
Nearly every civilization, Glenn, has always spouted that we are at end times. The end of the earth is near. Here we go. All of them. And nothing ever happened. What makes this one different?
And you're absolutely right. I think people have been so antsy and nervous about it. They certainly, when 1,000 years A.D. happened, there was a big poopah over the whole thing. William Miller and John Darby predicted the end of the earth in 1844, and that they had all the people donate their money to them. And then when it didn't happen, they kept the money and gave them another story. it's amazing what people have done with predictions. And that's why I completely avoid that. I mean, I could give you what I think is a pinpoint ending, but I find that to be kind of an evil practice. Because that's not the point. The point is to learn good and evil and let it play on its own, let it play itself out.
Well, and then if the date comes and goes and you're off by a year, people think, well, he was wrong.
Well, I've been wrong before, George, but the point of the issue is that's not what's important. What's important is to learn where we come from, why we're here, and where we're going, not the dates involved. The dates involved, people have been confused. In fact, the biblical accounts themselves, David Rohl wrote a great book called The Test of Time that's only available in Europe, only available in Great Britain. He suggests that the Bible is off by as much as 300 years because the archaeologists and anthropologists can't associate the archaeological findings with the actual events in the Bible. And I think David Rohl's right on. I think we've always played the date card.
Yes, you're right.
And I find that to be a silly thing. If I had the option of knowing when I would die, I would opt not to.
You really?
Oh, sure.
That would be an interesting open line question one night.
It would be. It would be fascinating. Most people would want to know, but I guarantee you what would happen.
Well, what if you knew you were going to die 10 years from now because of a car crash? Wouldn't you want to know that and avoid that?
No.
You wouldn't?
No.
Why?
Because it would diminish the quality of life from here to there.
You think that it would eat away at you?
It would make me as nervous as coming on your program.
Which you never are.
Are you kidding me? I throw up every time I come on the show.
Well, that's a great thought there, Glenn.
No, it's not meant to be because I don't like you. I love you, my good friend. It's just that I get nervous like anyone else. I don't perceive myself as being anyone but a bright collector of books, you know?
Well, at what point do you calm down? You seem okay now.
Well, about 5 seconds into the interview.
Yeah, okay.
It's kind of a magic potion.
We have a comforting factor here, don't we?
We do. You know, I hear your voice and all of the nervousness is gone.
The Watchers. Who sent the Watchers?
The Watchers have an agreement with deity, much like the aliens. It's the same exact protocol. The protocol is don't intervene in this life unless you're sent to specifically by the Creator himself. That's why you don't see aliens coming here, landing on the White House lawn, trying to shake the hand of the President of the United States. First of all, if they did that, the first thing the government would do would be to classify everything and try to reverse engineer it into some military uses. That's the first thing that they would do.
They may witness things, they just don't get involved.
They're commanded not to, because each and every sphere, we actually, before we came here, we actually voted. It wasn't a vote per se, but we actually agreed on the parameters or the protocol under which we would live. And there are different spheres of beings in different locations that have different laws, different protocols, different prime directives than we do. That's why the aliens are the aliens and we are who we are.
The way things are going today, you would think if we're going to get intervention, it would be now. It's not happening. Probably won't.
I think it's already occurred.
In what form? What fashion?
Well, I think that there have been what we call aliens, which are not so alien, who have come here, have taught people about agriculture, taught people about science, construction. Michael Cramo can tell you more about this than I do. He's one of my heroes.
Yeah, I like him.
He's
forbidden archaeology.
He's just wonderful in telling us about how many things have existed in history. But, you know, what can I say? There were other people at other times. And by the way, you know, you go back to the time of King Kronos, who was the first of the kings that were mortal.
Mm-hmm.
Neanderthal man and Cro-Magnon man are not our ancestors. They proved that via the genetic code in their bodies versus ours. We do not pass through them. So this great king Kronos, they had developed such a high-tech society that it says that the plants of the earth grew on their own and fed the people spontaneously. And that they could build great buildings with sounds, and that they had all things provided for them. First of all, they didn't alienate themselves from deity as we are trying to do. Our separation between church and state is the number one. Surely we should have a difference between church and state. But science was never divorced from faith at any moment in history except our own. This is the number one thing that spells the end of times. This is the final straw that is going to create the cataclysm, because there are so many people out there, especially scientists and the gatekeepers of knowledge out there, who have defined a creator model out of existence. We think that science would be the first people that would be open to all possibilities. They are not. They have evolved into Carl Sagan is a great man, but they've evolved into a Carl Sagan mentality, which suggests that in order for us to learn something new, it requires extraordinary proof. The people under King Kronos did not need to do that. They were willing to learn, willing to combine, willing to communicate with deity and the earth, and they, at some point in time, they got rich and lazy and fat and sassy and violated the laws of the earth and of deity and got themselves annihilated. Well, we have done the same thing, and that's what spells the end time for me, more than any of the dates in the Bible or the dates on the Mayan calendar of any sort. You can look at what's happening that is happening to us within less than a generation. It's happening to us.
Well, you remember the old saying, history always repeats itself.
It does. And when you get to be affluent, something happens to you. Jesus said it best. He said that it'd be harder for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven than for a camel to to go through the eye of a needle. The eye of the needle was those little short doors in the walls of Jerusalem where the camels had to get on their knees and crawl through them. That's what was called the eye of the needle. But it's true. We get to be affluent. We get to the point where we don't have to work for what we do, and so we don't learn. We don't learn from what we suffer because we don't suffer anymore. You know, in the 1950s, the average square footage of a home was 1,000 square feet, and the average size of a family is 5.5 kids. Now today, the average size of a family is 1.6 kids.
And the houses have gone up.
And the houses have gone up, and it takes two people working themselves sick to make the house payments. And we think we're living in the lap of luxury. We know less about our neighbors living next door to them than our ancestors did in the 18th century, who lived miles from each other.
Well, that's true. That's true. I've noticed an evolution with you, Glenn. You seem to be changing in some of your views. Is that true, or just my perception?
Maybe I'm just getting more articulate about it. I don't know. Everyone changes. You know, I continue to have these experiences which keeps knocking me down. I'm not as timid about speaking on the air as I was the very first time I talked to Hilly Rose.
And right.
Second time I talked to Art Bell, I was intimidated out
Gosh,
of my mind.
How long ago was that?
1997.
Yeah.
Years ago. And maybe that's the change that you see. But you know, we all go through a metamorphosis. One thing that I have done is that as I've gotten older, I've increased exponentially my need for goodness in my life and the sensitivity for being a good person. I always have been one that loved good people and tried to be a good person, but that has been multiplied in my older age. I look for opportunities to do that.
And have you seen an effect with yourself? Have you been, I guess, in some form and fashion, again, when you do that, you get rewarded somehow?
Well, I got married to an angel.
It's your guardian angel.
No, it's my wife.
Yeah, but she could be your guardian angel too, huh?
She's the guardian of my bank book for sure.
She's a watcher.
She watches over like a hawk at night. I don't get one cent extra.
I love it. Hey, Glenn, stay with us. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. Glenn's website's linked up at coasttocoastam.com as well. He will accept your emails that way. And as we rapidly approach the top of the hour, we'll open up the phone lines. Now you can call with your questions for Glenn Kimball. Wide open tonight with him. The extraterrestrial presence, your thoughts on the Watchers, your thoughts on end times. Glenn's an expert in that. If you want to talk with him about some of his ancient explorations and some of the work he's done there, the artifacts that were found in regions of this country that might have come from Egypt, you can do that too. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.